preseason podcast of the year is here once again. Welcome to Hip Hop Sports Report, y'all. Jay Hicks behind the mic for another wonderful podcast. Thank you for listening. Today is Saturday, June 27th. Man, we're almost halfway through the year. It'll be halfway on July 1st. It's crazy, man. But yeah, 2015 is flying by, man. And we just had one of the cornerstone moments in sports. Every year, the NBA draft just took place on Thursday night. That was two nights ago. We're going to get into all that momentarily. With our guests, of course. And I want to go ahead and before we get into anything, I want to apologize to all you guys out there. We had some technical difficulties this week that prevented us from doing our customary mock draft prior to the NBA draft. As you all know, we've been doing a mock draft before the NFL draft and the NBA draft, just kind of breaking down the top picks and who our guest analyst Mark Hicks believes each of those teams in those positions should take or what they should do in those positions. I was having some computer difficulties, you know what I'm saying, and my computer kind of crashed out on me for a little bit, but it's actually my fault. It wasn't even really the computer's fault, it was my fault, but you know, it wasn't nothing horrific, but we were able to get it fixed, thankfully, and so now here we are, and we got Mark back on the show this evening. So before we get into introducing him once again, make sure you guys check out the website, hiphopsportsreport.com. You guys can find the podcast here on iTunes, as you know, and on Stitcher. So do a search for us on iTunes or Stitcher, whatever it is that you listen to, podcast, whatever device you use or whatever app you use. Make sure you hit us, Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast. And you can subscribe to the podcast, and you can also comment and give thoughts, opinions, and rate the podcast. That stuff's extremely important, so please take the time to do that. Also, on the site, of course, is hiphopsportsreport.com, and you can find us on social media, facebook.com/HHS Report. Same with Twitter, twitter.com/HHS Report. The followers are growing, y'all. The numbers are growing, and we appreciate you guys tuning into us and checking us out, everything that we're doing here. And obviously, since the NBA Finals ended, we did get our article up on the Golden State Warriors, just kind of talking about, you know, are they really that good? They're good, but are they that good? And we dive into that, or I dive into that in one of our latest pieces there. And then also, we have a couple of other pieces coming up, one from myself about the Philadelphia 76ers that you can read right now on hiphopsportsreport.com. We also have a piece coming very soon from Anthony Houston with regards to the small ball phenomenon, and also one from Kenneth Hicks, our other contributor. He's going to be writing about the University of Michigan and Jim Harbaugh's Looney Tunish kind of behavior up there in Ann Arbor, you know. So all of that stuff's on the website coming very shortly. So thank you guys for reading, and thank you for checking us out as always. Now, this afternoon, Mark Hicks, once again, joining the preseason podcast of the year to talk NBA draft. Mark, how you doing today?
What's up, cousin? How you feeling today?
I'm feeling good, man. I'm always feeling good when I'm behind the mic with my peoples, you know what I'm saying? So,
I know you're happy that you got your computer back up and running. I know that was a little bit of disheartening for you in the meantime, you know, for the last couple of days. I know you've been feeling the pain, so I'm glad you got your computer up and running. Now you're whole again.
Man, it was brutal, man, let me tell you. But you know what? My wife is a sweetheart because she was the one that kind of helped me get it back up and running. And she had a hookup and she knew some people that was able to get it fixed for me. And I very much appreciate that because she's the one that's kind of on the losing end. Because when I'm on the computer, it kind of takes away from my, you know, time with her. And she wants to spend time with me because who doesn't want to spend time with me? You know what I'm saying? So when I'm not... You know what I'm saying? So when I'm on the computer, I'm not giving her necessarily the attention that she always wants, and then she gets a little upset with me. But she, being the outstanding wife that she is, she went ahead and got my computer fixed for me, and so and we got it on the low, you know what I'm saying, as far as pricing is concerned, on the very, very, very low, that is. So I very much appreciate that. And it's gonna garner her some consideration for wife of the year votes. You know what I'm saying? I always tease her and tell her that I'm about to sweep the husbies. You know what I'm saying? For rookie husband of the year and husband of the year. I'm in the running. You know what I'm saying? For the husbies, and I'm just gonna sweep them all. So this is getting her some consideration for wife of the year stuff. But anyway, we're gonna get into everything that happened with the draft and the NBA offseason real quick. But I wanted to first, Mark, talk to you a little bit about your experience at the NFL draft. Now, for those of you who follow the site, you guys remember that when we went over to the brand new site, which y'all should check out if you haven't already, it's super dope. that we had. You had a lot of photos that you took because you went to the NFL draft, you and your significant other, and you guys together took a bunch of pictures and chronicled the whole experience. And I kind of took those pictures, added some captions that I thought might be funny but probably weren't, and I posted them all in the gallery on hiphopsportsreport.com for your viewing pleasure. So Mark, if you could just kind of verbally walk us through, like, what's it like to attend the NFL draft? Because I've never been to any kind of draft like that before.
You know what? The entire experience was great from start to finish. There were a couple of things that I know that the NFL could do better. I'll get to that in a second. But the first thing we did when we got down there, and I didn't tell everybody, you know, my age or something like that on a podcast, but I'm 43 years old. So in 43 years, I've only been to Chicago one time prior to the time I went there for the draft. And I may have been like 8 or 9. So the experience, I never really got the full experience of Chicago. And in the time that I went, I was on the south side of Chicago. So I barely remember it, and it wasn't, you know, nowhere near the type of city that it is now. But going there was just a complete different experience. We had to, our hotel was 20 minutes outside of Chicago, so we had to take the train. So for those of you who, you know, who live in the Cleveland area, you know, we have our version of the train called the Rapid, but this is like an actual train, okay? You actually got to get on the train, and boogie down to the center of Chicago, downtown Chicago, and you get off there. You get off basically on Michigan Avenue. So we took the train down there. We had to be down there to pick up our tickets at noon. So we got down there about 11:30. Of course, the line was like ridiculously long, but I must give the NFL credit. They managed the line very well. We had to go in and go through the line, and they gave us an email basically with a little stamp that, you know, allowed us to get our wristbands. And one of the pictures that you showed was me, my draft wristband on there. So that was cool. But we were there, like, so we toured the city, stuff, took a lot of pictures and just toured some of the sites and had, you know, a bite to eat down there. And just the whole atmosphere was cool, just from the standpoint of, you know, you could see all the different fans with all their, you know, with all their gear on and stuff like that. And I had my gear on too, and they don't call it the Windy City for nothing. It was actually cold out there. So I went ahead and dropped the Scully on. So I'm going to put on the Scully. I'm going to keep my Browns jersey on and represent that type of thing. But, and then we'll get there. So time for the draft, and we go into the entrance with the picture that you showed with the little dog that's running across the street. And I didn't even notice that until you posted that caption about the dog. So we actually, that was the entrance to the place. So we actually went in there through that entrance. The thing that I have beef with the NFL about, now, any NFL fan who has been to a football game, you know, the game day experience, you know, they want you to have clear bags. They want you to put your items in a clear bag. And then women, you have to carry, you know, nothing bigger than a clutch purse, that type of thing. And they go through all these different security type things. Well, for the draft, they actually had the same process as you would for an NFL game. So people was all, you know, dialed up to the nine. You know, women had their dresses on, their long dresses, the clutch purses, the furs and stuff. She's going to the draft, which I thought was kind of hilarious, but the security there wouldn't let the people in there. And for me, I had my little video camera and stuff that I was taking pictures with. I couldn't take my bag in there. And my wife couldn't take her purse in there. And the thing was, like, it was no bigger than maybe like 2-3 inches. But they said she couldn't take it in there either. So I was ready to just, you know, take my camera out and just dump the bag. I didn't care, but you know, just the whole process in that regard, I thought that was a little overboard and ridiculous. And I don't know if they thought people was going to, like, you know, shoot Roger Goodell or something. I don't know what they were trying to, you know, do, but I think that part was a little bit overblown. So my message to the NFL is, if you guys are going to go ahead and have that same quote-unquote game day experience as far as the fans coming in, A, you should post that on your site or give that information when you give the people their tickets and everything else. And then B, if not, they should have some type of like locker set up, you know, like a bus station or something out there where people can put their belongings in. And then after the draft, they can come get their stuff out, you know. So you sitting up there for 5 hours and we're riding by train. We wasn't going to go all the way back to the hotel and then come back. That didn't make any sense. So I think from that standpoint, they could do a little better job. But the whole atmosphere was awesome, man. And the funny thing about it is when you're watching on TV and you see the picks coming in, actually, when you see a pick on TV, it's actually like four picks behind. So if you're watching pick number one, I'm actually like on pick number five. So that was the funny part. Yeah, that's hilarious because it's not live. So the funny thing about it is I was watching, they had TV set up in the place, and it was showing the actual broadcast. And while they were showing the broadcast, we were actually doing the live stuff. So we were like three, four picks ahead. All this time, I'm thinking that this stuff is going live. And that's how, if you look on Twitter and stuff, Twitter now, you know, it's the big thing to try to get information in a hurry. And they, you know, they have these picks, you know, already selected. And people are like, how did they get the pick before they actually said it? You know, spoiler, that type of thing. It's because of the delay. They actually physically delay the picks three, four picks ahead. So I knew what was going on before anybody at home knew what was going on, which was kind of hilarious.
So even if you wanted to like live tweet it, I assume everybody was encouraged to use their smartphones and their social media devices and whatnot. So like even if you wanted to live tweet it, you could have been live tweeting the picks from your Twitter account at Remark1972, and you could have just been like scooping everybody. Is that right?
Yeah, so here's how they did that, which I'm glad you brought up. So even though there were three to four picks ahead, they only released the picks like one pick at a time ahead. So they would just show on the side of the big screen in there. They would say that the pick is in, but they would not show what the pick was. So when you're on pick one, like I said, you have an idea what pick number two is, but three, four, and five, the picks are already in, but you don't know who the picks are. So they're just waiting and wasting time to catch up with TV time so that they will show the extra picks basically at the same time. And then the selections are already made within those 5-7 minutes or whatever the time frame is for, or actually 10 minutes, I think, in the first round for the NFL. Those picks are already made. They just don't announce the picks until closer to the time that it's actually doing the broadcast. So
that's how they
play that off and try to keep, you know, people from doing three, four, five picks in a row ahead of time. I think that's the same thing that happens in the NBA, which my wife was trying to get me to go to the NBA draft too, but it was a whole different ball game as trying to get, you know, to get into that bad boy. But a lot of the pictures that I gave you that were inside that were really, really good pictures, that was from my camera because I had that near the end of the draft, I started sneaking my camera out and taking pictures with that because from where I was sitting with my phone, I couldn't get a good enough picture from where I was sitting. So I used my camera, zoomed in, that type of thing, like the one with Roger Goodell at the podium, the one with basically the screensaver that, you know, your friend of the show, Anthony Houston, he could use for, you know, for his Green Bay Packers, all that stuff, you know, that was taken with my camera. So, and, you know, those pictures were, I mean, we were pretty far up, but the whole atmosphere was awesome. And then just taking picture with Charles Haley and everything, that was The whole night was spectacular from start to finish. Like I said, there's a couple things that they could improve on, but overall, I think it was just an awesome experience. I would love to do it again. And the city of Chicago should be very proud because they did an awesome job of hosting the thing too. It was awesome.
Yeah, that sounds really cool, man. I'm glad you got to experience that, and thank you again to Tandy for hooking that up. And you know, Roger Goodell has a lot of enemies, man. So you know. I mean, the guy hasn't made. I mean, how many friends does he have right now? I mean, with the ridiculousness that is Deflategate going on now.
Right.
I mean, it's been one blunder after another, and now Roger Goodell, who put the power in the hands of Troy Vincent, which he really should not have by the letter of the law of the Players Association. He did not have the authority to do that. He gave it to Troy Vincent. Troy Vincent went ahead and suspended Brady for four games and gave the Patriots team this heavy fine, which was not at all in concert with any other similar penalties for other infractions committed by teams involving the balls on game day. Then you have the fact that they never really found Tom Brady there's no evidence that he did anything wrong. To this day, they still do not have one lick of hard evidence that he did anything wrong or ordered that those balls be deflated intentionally below the legal limit. Because in my opinion, that's the only way that you can suspend him is if he did that. And even then, it's still a ludicrous punishment. They don't even have that. The science is off. The Wells report was off. Everybody knows it. And Goodell still is now presiding over this ridiculous witch hunt of that is Deflategate. And Tom Brady, we saw how insignificant it was because Brady balled out on the Colts even worse with the correct footballs in the second half than he did in the first half. And then we saw him beat the best defense in the league in the Super Bowl. So anybody that wants to call Tom Brady or the Patriots cheaters, miss me with all of that stuff. It's nonsense. This is a witch hunt. And I'm hoping that they exonerate my boy who you all threw dirt on last year. This is just a new way to throw dirt on him because you can't touch him. And
right.
I just had to get on that tangent real quick just because I haven't had a chance to express that here. And now that the appeal is going through and everything, I just wanted to get that off my chest right quick. But let's jump off the NBA, get into the, or jump off the NFL rather, and get into the NBA. The finals came and went, and our Cavaliers went down in defeat. As I said on the site, LeBron was carried off on a shield. He was carried out in game six. And it was really unfortunate that the Cavaliers kind of ran out of gas there. As a fan, from a fan perspective, as a Clevelander, as you and I both are, that was kind of tough to watch. But Golden State, they had a tremendous run this year. I question their status on an all-time level, which is kind of the purpose of the article that I had written, just because there's a lot of fluky things that kind of fell their way. Basically, every break that they could have gotten, they got them all. And every championship team catches a break here or there. I've never seen a team catch all the breaks. And Golden State, as talented as they are, they got all the breaks from start to finish this season. And so that's what makes me question how good they really, really are. But it's hard to say that they weren't the best team this year. And so give me your thoughts, Mark, on the NBA Finals just real quick. And I want to spend most of our time on the draft, but just really quickly, because we haven't spoken to our faithful listeners since the finals ended. What was your takeaway from the finals and how that played out on both sides?
I agree with you. From the Cavs standpoint, I think they just completely ran out of gas. It sucks as a fan, not just of the Cavaliers, but also of basketball, just to see how this team would have matched up against Golden State 100% healthy. I think the sad part about it is that two things have to happen when you're going into the playoffs. When you're going to April, you have to be playing A, your best basketball of the season, and B, you have to be completely healthy. And the Cavs were going into the playoffs. And then right from the time that Kelly Olynyk snapped Kevin Love's shoulder pulled it out of socket, I mean, it started a trickle-down effect as far as their health was concerned. And when you have guys like Dellavedova, as the voice CEO Palmer would say, Dellavedova, Smith, Shumpert, who are basically like 4, 5, 6 as far as your scoring options, or maybe even less than that, and now you have to propel them up to 2, 3s and 4 best scores on your team, then you're going to have problems. They basically ran out of gas, and I think even if they had just one of those guys, either Kevin Love or Kyrie Irving, if they had one of those guys healthy, I would have loved to see how they would have completely matched up at the end throughout the series. I personally think they would have won the series. And like you said before about Golden State, I think Golden State, like you said, had everything going for them. It was the perfect storm. The biggest thing that I noticed was Steph Curry did not have to work hard the entire playoffs. You think about it, starting point guard that he played against, when they played against New Orleans, yeah, the Pelicans. Tyreke Evans? They didn't really have a point guard that he was truly going against.
Drew Holiday was hurt.
Holiday was hurt. Correct. So then you go to the second round. You go with Mike Conley in the Grizzlies. He was hurt. Then you go to the third round. You go to the Rockets, and Patrick Beverley was hurt, and you was going against like 39,000 year old Jason Terry. Come on, man, really? And then now you go to the finals. You have Kyrie Irving, who for the first game of that series, actually, Steph Curry had to work harder in that first game than he had the entire series and the entire playoffs, actually. And then when Kyrie went down, he thought he could coast, but then he ran up against, Dele, and Dele's going to, is an irritant. He's going to get in his face, that type of thing, and he made him work early on, but, you have to look at it. That's why Dele went undrafted. At some point, talent is going to eventually come to surface, and he, after the game where he had to go to the hospital because he was dehydrated, he pretty much, that was the end of Dele for the entire series. He was never going to be the same, and the only way he was going to get better is with extended rest, and that just wasn't going to happen at that point because they needed him. But and then the big move that they talk about with Steve Kerr putting in Iguodala in the starting lineup. I mean, that was an act of desperation. I mean, pure and simple, because the Cavs front line was beaten up on the Warriors front line the entire series, and the only way they could to negate that situation was by starting Iguodala and going smaller, because they were getting exposed in the paint. The Cavaliers, even depleted as they were, their front line was beaten up on the Warriors' front line. And they knew that if they had to go longer and longer in the series, that they was going to break down. So they went smaller, sped the game up, got the tempo going. And that's pretty much how – and then because they had Sean Marion and James Jones and Kendrick Perkins and Mike Miller on the bench, which offer absolutely nothing in the series – I mean, they knew that the core guys were going to run out of gas, and that's exactly what happened. It was a stroke of genius. And then I read some article which said that their videographer, who's 28 years old for Golden State, was the one who actually saw this weakness and proposed it to Steve Kerr. So, you know, say what you will. They're throwing coals on David Blatt, talk about how terrible of a coach he is. I mean, I've heard Mike Tirico and all these other guys, you know, media, national media, just ripping this guy to shreds, and I think it's so unfair because he's had four different teams since this time last year. He has coached or been coaching four different basketball teams, and to get them to the finals in their first year, depleted as they were, I just think he did an outstanding job, and I think it's just unfair to him, and I think the Cavaliers would have offered a better shot had everybody been healthy. And I honestly think if had everybody been healthy going into that series, it wouldn't have been even close at all. I think they would have taken them in five games, personally, because they were just had that much more firepower than the Warriors did. But, you know, give credit to the champs. They earned it. They went through the regular season as the best team. They were number one seed going into the playoffs, and the perfect storm happened, but, you know, they took advantage of it, you know, so I can't fault them for that.
Now, it's funny that you mentioned that about David Blatt. I think David Blatt is kind of getting a raw deal, too, for the same reasons. I think he coached three or four different teams from the time that he was hired on in April or May of last year up till now. And he has to deal with the planet-sized ego of LeBron James, and as great as LeBron is, his ego is out of this world. I think most people would agree with that. Yep. And he got us within two wins of a championship, so I think he's getting a little bit of a raw deal, and I also think that my theory on the injury situation is I think the Cavaliers might have had, knowing what we know now, I think the Cavaliers might have had a better shot of beating Golden State if just Kyrie was out there than if Kyrie and Kevin Love was out there. Now, if both Love and Kyrie were out there, I think they still would have beaten Golden State. I really do. But I think that we as in the Cavs, talking as a fan, we would have been trying to outscore Golden State, which would have played into their hands. Now, you don't want to try to outscore that kind of team, because that team can put up points in a hurry. The best thing that we were doing was slowing the game down and grinding it out and holding Golden State under 20 points in a quarter, which we did several times in the earlier part of that series. That was the strategy to go, but we still needed a little more punch and a little more firepower. Kyrie Irving's presence gave the team that type of offensive balance that they needed. Plus, it gives the Cavaliers another creator, so it's not all on LeBron to create. He can create for LeBron. LeBron can be on the finishing end of some of those plays. Or Kyrie can create for others or for himself. And then you have LeBron doing everything that he does on top of that. I think that we saw Kyrie, he wasn't even 100%. And he still dropped 23 points and had a game-saving block at the end of regulation in game one. I mean, he was phenomenal in the time that he was out there. He proved, I mean, albeit a small sample size, he looked like he was ready for the moment. And so I think that rather than trying to outscore them with Love, and Love, as talented as he is a terrible defensive player, I think we would have gotten exposed a little bit on that end. But had we just had Kyrie, I think that would have been the Cavaliers' best bet at knocking off Golden State. But again, it's not Golden State's fault that all this played out the way it did. They can only play who's in front of them. And that's so right. They all those point guards happen to be hurt. It doesn't mean Steph Curry's not great. It doesn't mean Steph Curry wouldn't have beat him anyway, but he definitely got a helping hand this postseason. So it's just kind of one of those things that happened. And People are going to forget that part about it, but I don't think people in Cleveland are going to forget all the breaks that Golden State caught as the season went along. But let's go to the draft. Now, the draft was interesting. We had... Yeah, the consensus top pick was Karl Anthony Towns, which is funny because he was not the consensus top pick until about a week before the college basketball season ended. Then everybody's like, oh, Towns, he's got to be the guy. When it was like, well, wait a minute. All year, you saying people were saying that Okafor was the guy. Everything was all about Okafor. Okafor actually wins the championship, and somehow he slips in the draft, and it's all about Karl Anthony Towns going number one, which he did to Minnesota. Number two was D'Angelo Russell from Ohio State, the Ohio State University. He went to the Lakers, which I predicted. And I know, Mark, you said that you had read some stuff about that earlier in the day, thinking that they might do it. I read the same tea leaves that D'Angelo was actually going to go number two. And the prevailing wisdom going into the draft was still that Okafor was going to go number two to the Lakers. I predicted the morning of the draft, and it's on Twitter, that D'Angelo Russell was going to be the pick. And that's just exactly what the Lakers ended up doing. Third, then, was Okafor to the 76ers. And we're going to talk about them a little bit. I don't want to step on my article too much, but again, go out to hiphopsportsreport.com and check out my article about the 76ers plan with Sam Hinkie and his sandbagging, as I like to call it. And then fourth, of course, we had Kristaps Porzingis, who I christened him with the nickname of Chris Tapes. Shout out to Knicks Tapes from 2 years ago. We all remember Knicks Tapes. Well, now they got Chris Tapes, and New York was not happy about that. And Anthony Houston will be sharing a lot of opinions about him in the near future on HipHopSportsReport.com. But Mark, did you have any? First of all, just off the top, I don't know if you have anything about the first four players or any other specific takeaways. One other takeaway that I had was that I think Justice Winslow was the steal of the draft at number 10 to Miami. A lot of people feel that way. I was a fan of Justice League all throughout the season, the college basketball season, and I don't know how Detroit takes Stanley Johnson ahead of Justice Winslow. Like, I watched Stanley Johnson at Arizona. I watched Arizona games. You know, and it was there. I watched fewer of them than Duke because they're out on the West Coast. But I watched enough Arizona games to see that guy not have an impact on the game. And, like, he's just out there. And it's like, well, where's this lottery pick that everybody's talking about? And I just didn't see it when I watched Arizona play. But I saw Justice Winslow show up plenty of times for Duke. So what other takeaways did you have about the draft on Thursday night?
Well, just to go on your theory about Stanley Johnson, I had the same observation of Stanley Johnson when I watched the few games that I did of Arizona as well. When I saw him, he didn't do anything, or he didn't do much at all. And then almost like when we talked about last year during the March draft, when you talk about Gary Harris, like the times that you saw Gary Harris, he never did anything, and all of a sudden he was a lottery pick. Well, it was worse for me with Stanley Johnson. The games that I saw, he never did anything. And then all of a sudden he was talking about it in the top 10. I was like, you got to be kidding me. And then to have Justice Winslow fall to them, which, you know, I never expected him to even get to that point with Detroit. And then you pass on him. I think that was by far one of the dumbest moves of the draft that entire night, in the fact that you passed up a guy who, you know, if you put him in the right situation, he's going to be a star for you. And I really think Justice Winslow is going to be a star. And it kind of irritates me that he goes to the Heat. But, you know, at some point, you know, D-Wade has to pass the quote-unquote torch to somebody else anyway. And at this point, if Justice Winslow is anything like he was at Duke, he's going to be a fantastic player. And just from all observations, I think he's going to be a better pro than a better college player anyway.
Justice is, you know what's funny about Justice? He's a jack of all trades.
Yeah.
And he's a master of none. But correct. if he can master a couple trades and still be the jack of them other trades, he'll be an all-star player.
Exactly. And that's what I see in him. I see him as an all-star player. Comes back to him and how he develops as a player. But I just think his upside is just that good. I think he's going to do fine down there in Miami. Now, from Karl Anthony Towns, my son, who's, you know, soon to be 16 years old, he's all into basketball and everything. So the thing that we do a lot between the two of us, we tape the NBA draft combine, which, you know, a lot of people are like, why would you tape that stuff? But we watched a lot of the draft combine just to look at some of these players, especially some of the European players that, you know, you don't get to see. And then most importantly, what I like about the combine is that they do 5-on-5. They actually play, like, you know, pickup games. And I think that's a cool thing just to see how talented some of these players are.
For the record, your son is about the same size as Carl Anthony Towns, for the record. I'm just gonna put that out there. Like, you go to work every day so you can feed a young Carl Anthony Towns at the crib. That's, and your three other children. But go ahead and continue.
Yeah, I mean, because, well, for those of you guys who don't know, my son is 15. Well, like I see, he's soon to be 16. But he's 6'5", and he wears a size 15 shoe. So yeah, I'm paying for the private schools that all of these kids go to, and also, you know, just for his appetite. But yeah, that's what I do. But anyway, appreciate that. So Carl Anthony Towns, that's my son's favorite player coming out of this whole draft. He was a big fan of him. He was a big fan of him before he even went to Kentucky, and he was telling me about him. Like, this is the guy you need to see. And I watched them a lot during the season, you know, and with all the additional talent on there. The two things I love about him is he's a big guy that likes playing big, number one. And number two, he's an excellent free throw shooter for his size. And those two things, man, that will carry him a long way as far as his development as an NBA player. Because you can, when you are a very good free throw shooter, as you can see, we know with guys like DeAndre Jordan and Andre Drummond, you know, it doesn't matter how special you are late in games, especially with the hack of whatever. And then, you know, Shaq gets pissed off when they put the hack of Shaq in there because, you know, I was a great free throw shooter. No, you wasn't, Shaq. You was not a good free throw shooter. And that's why, you know, you have this mantle that you're going to carry around for the rest of your life. But everybody, since they've been hacked, now it's a strategy to hack these guys who can't shoot free throws. You know, this allows Carl Anthony Towns to play throughout the entire game, and then the longer he's out there, the more of an impact he can make. The best thing about him that going to Minnesota is he doesn't still have to play in the center because he had Petrovic there, and then he can play the power forward position. I think he's good enough to play power forward. He has a good enough outside shot to, you know, 20 to 25 feet that he can actually, you know, hit an outside shot. He can do a lot, and then he could go in the post if need to. So it's a good fit for him. So from that versatility standpoint, I think that's why he was the top pick in the draft.
Well, nobody talks about – they didn't talk about Carl Anthony Towns' ability to shoot until – it seems like the right up until the draft process. And they were saying, you know, Coach Cal basically stopped allowing him to shoot threes, and before you knew it, he wasn't shooting anything outside the paint. But the games that I watched Kentucky, he was a monster in the paint, and he could run the floor and – I mean, the Notre Dame game stands out to me in the tournament. He was fantastic in that game. He can rebound and he can defend, and he seems like a really good kid from a good family, and that's all well and good. And before you get into the other picks, I mean, like, are people selling short the Timberwolves? Like, nobody's talking about the Timberwolves. They're the ones that got last year's number one pick. We're going to ignore Anthony Bennett for a moment. They got last year's number one pick and rookie of the year, Andrew Wiggins, and now they got this year's number one pick in Towns. I mean, should we be talking about them more as far as, like, okay, they really have a young nucleus that we need to be watching out for in the future?
I think that's something that people need to start paying attention to. I really do. It's somebody actually had a real stupid comment today on the radio today saying that Kevin Love wasn't going to come back here, that he was actually going to go over to Minnesota. And the reason why is because of all the young talent around him. Yeah, I had to turn the radio off after that, really. Because it was so idiotic of a comment. But he did make a point about how all of the young talent that they have between the guys that you mentioned, Zach LaVine, Tyus Jones, who eventually got drafted by the Cavaliers but traded to them. I mean, they have a young nucleus going there. And they have, most importantly, they have a plan. And that changed, I mean, that falls by the wayside with picks 3 and 4, okay, so with Philly and in New York. I don't know what plan they have, but, I mean, that's the thing that really irritates me about those two particular franchises, that they don't seem to have a good plan in place. But to go back to your original point, I think Minnesota is a team that, you know, should be reckoned with. However, the problem is with them is that they play in the West. The best thing about the fact that they play in the West is that a lot of the teams that are good teams that are in the West are old teams. And eventually when those teams start falling by the wayside, then you'll start seeing Minnesota actually starting to become more and more prominent in the Western Conference as those other teams get, you know, their stars get older, they start, you know, having to get into the lottery and start drafting guys all over again. And if Minnesota can keep that nucleus together, that's going to be a big key for them.
Tell me a little bit about the Knicks plan versus the Lakers plan. Because I think before we started taping, you said that you had a lot of commentary on the Knicks plan or lack thereof versus what the Lakers are doing and maybe even what the Sixers are doing too. So, I mean, talk a little bit about that. Because, I mean, I went into great detail on hiphopsportsreport.com about the 76ers and why I think their quote-unquote plan, their sandbagging, is ridiculous. And even though I defend the selection of Jahlil Okafor at number 3, I think that was the correct pick because he was the best player on the board at that spot. Nevertheless, it underscores the idiocy that we've seen from this franchise the last 3 years. And so I kind of go all into that and the notion that they're going to have, well, even if they have these three bigs whom we know can't play together, they have these three big guys and they can sit on these quote unquote assets and then trade one of them. Well, trading is all about leverage, and you don't have the leverage to make a deal. You know, you don't have that leverage to make the necessary deal that you want to make and not get taken to the cleaners when everybody knows that you need to make a deal. So we know Philly's going to have to trade at least one of these three big guys. Nerlens Noel and Embiid's value is already down because of the injury history. Now you're going to factor in the point that we know they have to make a trade because they cannot keep all these guys. Who do they expect to get in return that's of proper value for where they drafted these guys at? That's what I don't understand. So that's a big hole in the Hinkie strategy, I feel like. But again, talk to me a little bit about the Lakers plan versus the Knicks and Sixers.
Okay, so back when I was talking to you about the Lakers and the Sixers, you can tell the difference. This draft basically shows the mindset of what the LA Lakers are looking at long term and what the Knicks are looking at long term. Because knowing what we know, in the history of the LA Lakers, they've always centered their success around the big guy and then built a team around the big guy. You can go back, you know, Kareem Abdul Jabbar, you can go back to George Mikan when they were in Milwaukee or whatever it was.
Minneapolis,
thank you. The Minneapolis Lakers. So you can go back to George Mikan, you can go to, you know, to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Will Chamberlain, Shaquille O'Neal. Everything was centered around the big guy, and then they built around them. So that's why if we had a mark draft, I was going to have them select Okafor because that's been the style that they've been going to. Some of the parts of and we talked about this before now about this being a point guard lead. If you don't have a good point guard, your quote was last time we talked about it was lots of luck, and that's the truth. And D'Angelo Russell, and I've seen a lot of him at Ohio State. I wasn't 100% sure he was a quote unquote point guard, but what I did know, and this is what Magic Johnson also tweeted, you know, a couple days before the draft, is that when he's on the floor, he makes his teammates better. So from that standpoint, you got to look at, as a franchise, what you're trying to do. You're trying to get, quote-unquote, the best player, or are you going to go by the strategy that you've always gone by? So I applaud Mitch Kupchak for trying to go out on a limb and going for the guy who he thought was the best player and then changing the entire strategy that franchise has had for the last, like, 30, 40 years. On the flip side for the New York Knicks, I don't necessarily disagree with Porzingis. The problem with it is because that team and that franchise has been so terrible for so long. And Anthony Houston, I'm quite sure he's livid about this whole thing. But the problem with the Knicks is that they took a guy who is extremely talented. I've seen a lot of video on him, and I saw him at the combine. My son and I watched him at the combine. I think he could be he very well could be Dirk Nowitzki, or he could very well be Darko Milicic. It doesn't. That's the scope of him. He has the most upside, but if he never reaches that upside, he will be Darko. And you have, and basically, it's a project. He's a project player. You cannot, as a franchise, and especially with the number one market in this country, take a project with the fourth pick in the draft. You need to get somebody who has the most opportunity to be a star. Now, you may say in 5 years, Porzingis could be that one of those stars. But the problem is that if they don't start winning soon, Phil Jackson won't be around to reap the rewards of him selecting Porzingis. Because he'll be back in Montana running his ranch and everything and sending his old folks home out there and retiring. Because he's going to get fired. When you make deals like this, when you don't seem to have a necessary plan, and especially in a town like New York, which eats up, you know, franchises alive when they make crazy decisions like that, I mean, if they don't start winning soon, and they have all this cap space, and they try to talk about, well, you know, it's New York City, people going to want to come here, but they're not going to want to come here if they're not going to win. And you go ahead and you can try to have all the cap space that you want, but it's all about, like you said, you have to give these players a reason to come there. It's not just because of the bright lights and just being New York City. And that's the arrogance of New York City. You know, they just think it's just because it's New York, people are just going to run to them. And that's not necessarily the case. It's about opportunity to win, too. They want to win, too. They just don't want to come there just because of the city. They want to win. That's where the difference is, because they're hoping, and the Lakers are like, we're all in. We're going with this guy. We're going with this kid, and we have a plan going forward to the future, because we have him. We have Julius Randle, Kobe on it, and you know he's going to do his sayonara tour around the entire country, and then we're going to go with this new brand of Lakers and this new brand of Laker basketball. We're going to try to get back to Showtime, and the only way we can do that is by starting with the point guard, with the playmaker, and that's where D'Angelo Russell is.
Okay, I was going to say a couple things now. You raised the point about D'Angelo Russell being having that Showtime flash, and I think that was a big reason why they selected him. Additionally, there's been a lot of speculation or scuttlebutt about the Lakers possibly landing either LaMarcus Aldridge in free agency or DeMarcus Cousins via trade. I think it's highly unlikely that they'll land DeMarcus Cousins, and frankly, I think it's unlikely that they'll land LaMarcus Aldridge in free agency, but it's not impossible. I can see a scenario where LaMarcus Aldridge would go to LA. They're not going to get both of those guys, but they could get one of them. And if they can land LaMarcus Aldridge to play with Randle and Kobe and D'Angelo Russell, I mean, they're not winning a championship, but that's not a terrible lineup to trot out there. And you can see with that thinking, there's a remnants of a plan. There's something like a plan in place. On the flip side of that, you have the Knicks. And for the record, I've spoken to Anthony Houston since the draft. He's not livid about the selection of Chris Tapes. He's not. You might think he is, but it's defensible, and he's still all in on Phil Jackson. Here's my question for the Knicks. How does, and it's kind of to your point about his growth as a player, how does he fit into the triangle? I mean, I'm not saying that he doesn't fit into the triangle, but he's like 7'3" or something like that, I think. He's listed at 7'1", but I think he might actually be closer to 7'3". But he's not a back-to-the-basket player. And in the triangle, you typically have a back-to-the-basket threat or somebody who can post up. Now, maybe that guy is Melo. Maybe Melo's going to be your pivot guy, and they put Chris Tapes on the opposite side of the floor or something like that. But Melo, he's not really a passer either, so he's not really somebody that you're going to throw to him on the block and look for him to make plays for others. That's never been his game. So I don't know if with Phil Jackson maybe not necessarily being there for the long haul. I mean, he says he is, but we don't know that. And then to your point too, I mean, he can wind up getting canned before this thing even comes to fruition. Then we have Derek Fisher as a head coach. Is Derek Fisher going to get the most out of Porzingis? I don't know that. Is Carmelo Anthony going to make him a better basketball player? I don't think he will. Who else on this team is going to do that? It was interesting that they said that Phil had to brace Chris Tapes about him getting booed at the lottery when he was selected. Now, that in and of itself says something, that they had to prep him like, okay, dude, okay, listen, we're going to make you the pick. And they're going to boo the living hell out of you, okay? Just understand that this is part of our process in the bright lights in New York City. Like, is that the kind of welcoming that you want to give this guy? Like, for a foreigner like that who may not be used to that sort of thing? I mean, he grew up in Latvia or something like that, and maybe he played in Spain or someplace. I mean, it's just, I don't see it working anytime soon. Now, I'm not saying he's going to fail. I'm not saying he's going to fail. I'm not saying he's not a good prospect or a good player. I'm not saying that at all. I just don't know if that pick makes the most sense for this team given the circumstances. Now there's speculation that Carmelo was livid about the selection of Chris Tapes as if there was somebody else in the draft that was automatically going to make him a semifinalist in the Eastern Conference. I don't really know what Melo's thinking, but I mean, do you have any thoughts on that? I mean, like, where do the Knicks go from here? And do you think ultimately the Lakers made the right decision?
I think time will tell with the Lakers. I believe in D'Angelo Russell. I think he's a good player, and I think that, like you said, there's a plan in place. I think of the two that you mentioned with LaMarcus Aldridge and Boogie, I think they're going to try their best to try to get Boogie so that they can take care of the pivot, because I think part of the reason why they were scared of Okafor, I don't think it was the deciding factor, but I think it was the fact that A, he's not a very good defensive player, and B, he's not a good free throw shooter. And I think those two things, and the fact that D'Angelo Russell has that much more talent to be a superstar in this league, I think that's what was the deciding factors in why they selected him as well. And like we talked about the whole Showtime thing. For the Knicks, I don't dislike Porzingis at all. I think in time he could be a very good player, but I think as far as fit, I think what Phil Jackson was envisioning was somebody like a pick and pop type of guy who can shoot the jumper off the pick and roll and out of the triangle and that type of thing, like Paul Gasol did. But only problem with Porzingis is he does not have a post game, and he's only 10 pounds heavier than my son is now. You know what I'm saying? That's going to be a problem when he's going up against grown men.
And so, Paul Gasol was a terrific passer.
Yes, he was. And I haven't seen enough of Porzingis to see if he's that type of a passer. I don't know. Maybe that's something he can develop out of the post. I don't know. But it's going to take time with him. And time is not on the Knicks' side at all. That's why it's such a bad choice as far as fit. I don't dog the player. I dog the fit. And I think that, you know, they needed somebody who could instantly give them something. I mean, for me, I would have drafted either Justice Winslow or Moutier just because of the fact of the instant impact that they could have given that team. I mean, they don't have a point guard, and like I said, Justice Winslow, you could put him at the two, and he could actually give you something immediate impact, and Porzingis could be good long term. I have no idea, but I just think that like you said, it was just a bad fit, and I don't know where they can go from here. Now, a team that you really don't know where they can go from here is the 76ers. I read your article on that, by the way. It was a good article too, because you spoke a lot of the same sentiments like that I have. The problem with the Sixers, yes, Okafor was the best talent. I agree with you, and by that aspect, they should have taken him. However, it goes twofold with this. One, they picked him because they don't have a plan, number one, because not only did they pick him, the picks that they made after him, think about that. All of the picks that they made after him was guys like 6'10 or taller. Yes. What in the world are they doing with all these guys?
I don't know.
What I'm saying? They don't have a point guard. They don't have a shooting guard. They don't have anybody in the backcourt who can make a difference. And then they're small. They don't have a small forward. I mean, they have a bunch of fours and fives. They actually turned themselves into the Sacramento Kings, personally. That's just the way. They're the Eastern version of the Sacramento Kings. They got fours and fives, and they don't have anybody else. And they don't. And I think that's the first thing. And then secondly, I think that this Embiid issue with his foot not healing correctly, I think it's worse than they've anticipated.
Yep.
And I think that they've got damaged goods, and I think that they took Okafor because they know they messed up with Embiid.
Yep.
And that's just my personal opinion. I have no factual information to go off of, but just the fact that this guy is, he's sat a year, he's gained weight, he's basically, for the most part, out of shape. He hasn't really played any type of basketball in well over a year and a half now. And the fact that he still needs more time to heal this foot, I don't think he'll ever get to the point, and they may have to, like, re-break it and start the process all over again if it doesn't heal any better over the next couple of months. He's going to be in a situation where he could be just damaged good, and they may not get anything out of him. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
So it's a double take for them. But they have absolutely zero plan right now. They don't have any type of – and nobody's going to come there free agency-wise. Nobody.
Nope.
Unless you're Deion Waiters and you want to come home. But any other person, they're not coming. They're not coming to Philly, man. They're just not. And you talk about a long-term plan. This is the longest of long-term plans. Because Sam Hinkie, you talk about, and I talked about Phil Jackson getting fired. Sam Hinkie's going to get fired long before Phil Jackson gets fired. Because this guy, he does not have any type of clue on what he wants to put out there as far as, I mean, he doesn't even have a team to even compete at this point.
Well, my thing with Sam Hinkie,
broken.
Yeah, like if you're Sam Hinkie, when do you turn the corner? Like, when do you decide, okay, this is the time that we turn the corner? Like, it's like, in the article, I compared it to him wandering around a dark hotel room looking for the light switch, hoping to stumble across a franchise player. What is he? Okay, LeBron James is not walking through that door. You know what I'm saying?
Nope.
Like, who is it that he thinks is just going to come along and be the quote-unquote savior? I mean, they hype up a new high school kid every year to be the next big thing. A couple
right.
of years ago, it was Andrew Wiggins. A couple of years before that, it was Shabazz Muhammad. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's always
mm-hmm.
there's always somebody who's going to be the next big thing coming out of school, and how often do they ever turn into the next big thing? And even if they come into the league, and even if they do turn into be a pretty good player as, like, the top overall pick, like Dwight Howard or somebody like that, or Yao Ming. Yao Ming was a great player, but he got hurt and couldn't finish his career. Dwight Howard was a great player. He's a Hall of Famer, Dwight Howard. As much as nobody wants to admit it, he is.
Yeah,
but he's too much of a knucklehead to lead a team to a championship. You can't do it with him. So I don't know what kind of lucky charm Philadelphia is waiting on, or who, what seventh grader they got their eye on. Maybe it's Bol, Manute Bol's son. You know, of a former 76er. I don't know who it is they got their eye on, who they've been scouting since they were playing AAU ball with a bunch of fifth graders or something like that. They know that once this guy comes out, we'll have the number one pick, and then we'll be able to get our guy. It boggles the mind, whatever it is that the 76ers are trying to do. Because, again, Embiid, with him being damaged goods, as you pointed out, what are they going to trade him for? Like, if their strategy is to say, okay, we got Nerlens Noel and we got Okafor, and one of them's good on offense and the other one's good on defense, and we'll just roll with those two bigs. Well, now you just wasted the third overall pick on Joel Embiid. Now what are you going to do with him? You're going to trade him for what? Who's going to trade for?
Nobody's going to take it.
Yeah, that's like trading for Greg Oden right now. Like, nobody's going to do that. Like, at this point, like, that's basically what he is. And I love Embiid's, his Twitter account is hilarious. But aside from that, we haven't seen anything from him. Remember last year when we were talking on the mock draft before the NBA draft, and we were talking about how much of a mistake it would be for the Cavaliers to pick Embiid over Andrew Wiggins? Go back and listen to that podcast, y'all, from a year ago. I mean, we said that back then, and here we are a year later, and it's a disaster in Philadelphia. Mark, I'm going to go ahead and rip through the lottery real quick, and I'm going to see if there's anything else that jumps out at you, either player or fit or... whether it's Jay Billis hilariously saying that Miles Turner has trouble running in a straight line on the draft. Did you hear him say that?
Yeah, I almost fell out of my chair when he said that. First of all, I just want to say real quick, ESPN's coverage of the draft was absolutely ridiculous. It was terrible. It was terrible. I'm a fan of to a certain degree of Jalen Rose, but I don't know what's the deal with Jalen. It's like the more he gets on TV, the more he makes an ass out of himself. I mean, seriously, his comparisons, NBA comparisons, are completely horrible. You know, from JJ Hickson basically one long tall white guy is compared to an older tall white guy, or one guy who has terrible hands is compared to another guy who has terrible hands. It's like his guys is like to the extreme. It's not good comparisons at all. And he just rambles on with a whole bunch of nonsense. So
you know what's funny about that?
It's horrible.
You know what's funny about that is that a friend of the podcast, Adam Clark, who we've had on during football season in the past. Shout out to the All Football Show, the award-winning All Football Show. Adam and I were talking over text after the draft, and he was saying the same thing you were saying. And I said, well, in his defense, number one, we don't know that Jalen Rose came up with all these player comparisons on his own. They might have had some people doing it for him, and then he just read them on the air for all we know. That's one thing. The second thing is, Jalen Rose, even if he did come up with them, he's responsible for coming up for player comparisons for 75 guys, because they only draft 60 guys. But you know, there's another 10 to 15 guys that didn't get drafted that they had to have on deck just in case they did get drafted. So you got to figure there's like 75 player comparisons that they had to come up with. That's not easy to do. Like, I'm not sure how good I would have been at something like that. But Adam said, well, you know what, if you got the resources of ESPN, you got to be a little bit better than that.
Yeah, and I have to agree with Adam on that one.
And then I think everybody, like some people, I saw somebody said on Twitter that every player comparison was like they were comparing him to some, like you said, best case scenario, Hall of Famer kind of guy. And somebody on Twitter said, now, I'm not saying that this guy is Jesus of Nazareth, but, you know, that, I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
But, so, and nothing was funnier than Jay Billis saying that Miles Turner is working on running in a straight line, and yet they just gave him like $1.5 million a year for being the 11th pick. But okay, so again, we'll just run through the lottery real quick. And like I said, anything that jumps out to you, I think Frank Kaminsky went kind of high personally. And even though it wasn't in the lottery, I like that the Houston Rockets grabbed Sam Decker and Montrezl Harrell. I like both of those picks. But Karl Anthony Towns, 1 to Minnesota. D'Angelo Russell, 2 to the Lakers. Jahlil Okafor, 3 to the Sixers. Chris Tapes, number 4 to the Knicks. Mario Hinoja, number 5 to the Magic from Croatia. Willie Cauley-Stein to Sacramento at 6. Emmanuel Mudiay, 7 to Denver. Stanley Johnson, 8 to Detroit. Frank the Tank, 9 to Charlotte. Winslow, 10 to the Miami Heat. 11, Miles Turner to the Pacers. 12, Trey Lyles from Kentucky to Utah. 13, Devin Booker from Kentucky to Phoenix. 14, Cameron Payne from Murray State, a sophomore from Murray State, the last pick of the lottery to Oklahoma City. Anything from that group stands out to you?
Two things. I like Cameron Payne going to the Thunder. I think they needed a backup point guard, per se, and most importantly, they needed somebody who was young enough to not make waves about not getting the ball like Reggie Jackson did when he was there. So I thought that was a good pick for them. We talked about Justice Winslow to the Heat. I thought that was a steal of the draft, from my understanding. Frank the Tank, I think he did go a little bit higher than expected to the Hornets. I did love his suit jacket where he had the tanks inside. I thought that was kind of slick. The one thing about Frank Kaminsky, and I think this is also plays into it, is that what we talked about last year in the fact that, you know, teams are going younger and younger with these guys. Frank was the only senior that was taken in the lottery. And I think that for him to even be taken in the lottery, I think that's leaps of bounds above, you know, what's been going on recently in the NBA draft. But I think, you know, younger guys are the key, the international guys, the guys who have these potential, you know, the potential in the 19, 20, you know, no older than 21-year-olds. You know, these guys are going to be at the top of draft for a long time, and specifically because they want to maximize the amount of time they have for these kids. And if they get somebody special, they'll have them longer on their team. They can keep them there, develop them a lot longer. So that's the way that they're going to go from that. I think the best pick, though, you know, besides Justice Winslow going to the Heat, is Mudiay going to the Nuggets. I think the teams that pass on, like the Knicks and a couple other teams that like the Kings who need a point guard, I think it's gonna come back to bite them that they did not take this guy. And if anything from a defensive standpoint, he is going to be a defensive wizard on the next level. And I think the Nuggets got a steal with him dropping down to 7. So from the lottery standpoint, those are the ones that stand out to me.
Another pick that I liked was Bobby Portis. He slid all the way to 22 for Chicago. I thought that he went too low.
I agree.
And he was, I think he was SEC Player of the Year, or maybe not Player of the Year, but he had a really good year for Arkansas. He might have been Player of the Year. I think he
was Player of the Year, if I'm not mistaken. Or if not, yeah. He was really cool. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if he wins Player of the Year, that's saying something, because Kentucky's in the SEC, so that's saying
Correct.
Something if he won. Right. And then in addition to that, speaking of Kentucky, I think Devin Booker going 13 to Phoenix was a pretty good pick. And those are the ones that kind of stood out the most to me in the first round. Now, the Cavaliers, as you mentioned earlier, selected Tyus Jones, brother. Yeah, from Duke, who was the most outstanding player in the tournament. Your thoughts on the Cavaliers offseason, where they go from here? I mean, LeBron, they're trying to make a headline out of that. He'll take a wait and see thing. That's garbage. He's coming back. Okay, I don't know if he's coming. He might sign a 1 year or he might sign a 5 year. I don't know, but he's coming back. LeBron ain't going nowhere. That's the first thing. The second thing is, I think Kevin Love is going to stay for at least one more year. I think he's going to he might sign another 1 year deal and then wait till the new TV money kicks in and then go for his long term deal next year. Plus, it'll give him another year to kind of see how things shake out for him in Cleveland. I mean, everybody's talking about Kevin Love leaving, which is funny to me because all he said all along is that he's going to play with the Cavs opening night next year. He literally said, I'm going to be playing for the Cavaliers on opening night next year. And they're still talking about him leaving. Like, well, I don't know what else he has to do. He hasn't signed yet, but I don't know what else he has to do verbally to try to squelch the rumor machine. But everybody's assuming he's gone. Why would he go to L.A.? They're probably not going to make the playoffs even if he goes there next year with Russell and Kobe. Like, I don't see that happening. Like, why would he leave a situation where if he's healthy, he probably wins a world championship this year? Whereas to go someplace else, get paid more money, live in maybe a nicer city, in his opinion, but still be on a terrible team just like he was all those years in Minnesota. So I think ultimately the Cavs, I think the key to the Cavs all season to me is Tristan. And I kind of want to see how much Tristan tries to get out of Dan Gilbert, because this is like a shakedown right now between LeBron, Tristan, and their agent, right? Because they share the same agent, and LeBron and Tristan are boys, and he wants to get Tristan everything he has coming to him. Tristan Thompson, who I've met him before, he's a very nice guy. He works really hard on the glass. I think he's an animal on the glass. But Tristan is a fairly one-dimensional player, and he doesn't get you much by way of offense. So I don't know how he's going to sit here and demand max money just because he hustles and gets a lot of rebounds. Where last year, when he was the second or third option on the team, we weren't making the playoffs and he wasn't doing much of anything. So I'm hoping from a Cavs fan standpoint that he doesn't demand too much money and that there's enough money left over to spread around without making Dan Gilbert go completely insane or bankrupt. But what do you think the Cavs are going to do this offseason before we get out of here?
Okay, so going back to the draft part where they picked Tyus Jones, I heard something today that the Cavs had their quote-unquote top 15 players. And if any one of those top 15 would have came to them or dropped to them at 24, they would have taken them. And if they drafted a guy at 24, they would have had to pay them with, $7.5 million in luxury tax money. So from that standpoint, that's the reason why they traded out of that spot and traded down to get the two second round picks for Minnesota, because they're not guaranteed and they pretty much can, if they make the team, then they can pretty much dictate how much those guys can make, which is a smart move. The one player that they wanted that was in their top 15 that they had a shot at, if he had fell to 24, they would have taken him, and that would have been DeLon Wright, the point guard from Utah. If he was the last player that they had on their top 15 and he was taken by the Raptors, and if he would have dropped to them from 20 and he had dropped to them at 24, they would have taken him. That's what I've heard yesterday on that, and I would agree. That was the guy who I wanted all along if he fell to them. But, to each his own. I'm okay with Christmas and Osman, the stash and dash type of guys. You leave them overseas for a couple of years and bring them over. I'm okay with all that stuff. I agree with you about Kevin Love. Kevin Love's not going. I honestly believe he's not going anywhere. If worst case scenario, I think he's going to sign a 1 year with an option so that he can get the TV money. I don't think he has any intentions really of leaving, because he got his first taste of the playoffs this year. And I think they finally, by the end of the regular season, they finally figured out how they were going to use Kevin Love. And I think they didn't play much defense when they played against Boston. But for the most part, you could see from a scoring standpoint and a rhythm standpoint how they fit Kevin Love in. So I personally don't think he's going anywhere. I think he's going to be back. It's just a matter of how long. I've heard everything from him I think worst case scenario, he signed a one year with an option. But I honestly fully think, especially since he's coming off an injury, I think he wants security. So I think he may go the full 5 years. I could be completely wrong, but I think because, you know, his propensity to get hurt, especially the last few years, I just think that he wants some type of protection for himself. So I think he may want to go a little bit more long term. It's hard to walk away from $100 million, from 5 years, $100 million. I think he's going to take a long, hard look at it. And I think eventually he's going to stay with the Cavs. The biggest thing for the Cavaliers and what they need to do this off season is that they got to get all that dead weight off their bench and go younger. And not necessarily, you know, 19, 20, 21 years. I'm talking about a situation where they're getting guys that's 24, 25, 26 in that type of a range. And I think, you know, cause as guys get hurt and things like that, you know, they're going to be relying more and more. And I think once David Blatt has an idea now of the NBA game and how to utilize his bench more, I think those, especially during the regular season, so that the stars don't get burnt out when it comes to the playoffs, I think that's going to be the key for him. I think they need to use the Brendan Haywood contract to try to get some of these younger guys in here. But I think if everybody comes back healthy, which I honestly think the only one who I think has a shot of not coming back is possibly J.R. Smith. But I think it's because his reputation and just the fact that he didn't show up in the finals, I think that's going to hurt him financially, and I think he's going to eventually come back to us. Tristan Thompson, I think they want to see where the market is set, which team is going to actually try to give him a max deal or close-like max deal so that the Cavs can match it. I think I like him. I think he's a hard worker. But he is one-dimensional. You don't run plays for him, which is, I guess, in a sense, kind of good because you really don't have an ego if you're not running a bunch of plays for you per se. And defensively, he makes the Cavs a lot, you know, his presence makes the Cavs a lot better. But he's still that one-dimensional guy that we've had, you know, since the draft. And he came in here and people was talking about him after the first 2 years saying he was a bust. He's only 24 years old. It's like he's, you know, this old decrepit man or this wily veteran. He still has a lot of room to grow and a lot of different. I mean, first of all, he had to figure out whether he was left or right-handed. That was the biggest thing. So he's still developing as a basketball player. So, I mean, let the market set where he should, you know, how much money he should make. And then, you know, the Cavs will end up matching it. They're going to have probably one of the biggest payrolls in NBA history. But I guess it's worth it. But the thing that scares me about this whole situation is that LeBron wanted Mike Miller here. LeBron wanted James Jones here. LeBron wanted Sean Marion here. And the more power that they give LeBron, the worse I think long-term will be for this Cavaliers team. I think they need to stop worrying about what LeBron wants and start worrying about what's best for the team. Because the sooner they do that, I think the sooner they can make the team that they have with the core that they have, an actual dynasty that can compete for the next 4 to 5 years.
I was going to say, that's a whole other subject for another podcast as far as whether or not the Cavaliers organization is giving LeBron too much power. In general, I think that the Cavs don't need to reinvent the wheel. A healthy Cavaliers team wins the NBA championship this year. I firmly believe that. So
yep,
they should be fine, provided that they can stay healthy and if they can keep this unit together and not kill the head coach. I think they'll be fine. We are out of time though, man. Thank you for coming back for our post NBA draft, post mark draft edition.
The after party.
Exactly. The after party. I like that. The after party of the Hip Hop Sports Report NBA Mark Draft Podcast. Thank you all for listening this day. Hit us on the website, of course, hiphopsportsreport.com, and let us know what you think about the podcast and anything else that's on your mind. Check us out on Twitter at HHS Report. Same thing with Facebook. And, of course, we're on Google+. We're everywhere, man. We're on Stitcher. We're on iTunes. Thank you all for hitting us up. Please, if you haven't already, go get Natural Life, a book by Kenneth Hicks at obeliskmediagroup.com. It's also available on amazon.com and for the Kindle. Mark, thank you for joining us today, man.
Appreciate it. Yeah, and that's a good book, by the way. I wanted to shout out your brother. He did an awesome job with that book.
So please go get it, y'all. We out here. Take care. Peace.